SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two here at Oaklawn. First of 3 days leading into the Racing Festival in the South. And, of course, the Fantasy, the three-year-old fillies on Friday, kind of taking the role that the Apple Blossom held for so long. Apple Blossom now on Sunday. But then Saturday, of course, Arkansas Derby Day and the Count Fleet and more. And the fields will come together today. There'll be a draw. We get off, 11 o'clock? And I think the draw is here at noon. Either noon or 12:30, so you'll know fairly early in the afternoon how the Arkansas Derby field came together, and we've been kind of tracking it. We'll see if Jen has got any updates when they open the entry box before the draw later on. Right now, going to tie in with Sid Fernando for Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And Sid continues to track Son Joe, and just a delight yesterday at the ESPN feature on Joe, and then he doubles off the wall to put an exclamation point on him. It's kind of great, Joe. I love it, Sid.
Thanks, Steve. I know it was fun. I left Daytona, so the game yesterday was in DeLand, Florida, against Stetson. And, yeah, I was thrilled, really. Just missed a home run by, like, a foot. Went 2-for-4, stolen base, run scored. Real close game until the top of the eighth. We were winning 2-1. But what happens in these midweek games now, Steve, is that they save their best pitching for the conference games for the weekend. So, some freshman pitchers that coughed it up in the bottom of the eighth, and ended up losing the game. But thanks, yeah. Joe had knock on wood, a 2-for-4 day, and you never know with these streaks, but it's up and down. But he's on an up right now.
Yeah, good. And the scouts, steady parade in the stands. You're watching the boys.
He's been scouted pretty well. It's like Rocco Baldelli, my friend, who's manager of the Twins, but he's also a horseman. One thing he said about Florida, he said you can get scouted too much because every wart comes out,
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, it's true.
That is, I don't want to say familiarity breeds contempt, but you want them to come get a snapshot, and you don't want them to make a movie necessarily.
Exactly. The thing here in Florida is that there's so many scouts because it's such a fertile playground for baseball talent that, they see so much. And as Rock always used to say, when he was with the front office of the Tampa Bay Rays, you're looking for things to knock in a guy.
Right.
Very similar to, looking at horses, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very similar.
That's a great analogy, though. Yeah. Absolutely, I sense the harmony immediately.
Well, and there's a lot of harmony between these two because, these guys, it's almost like a 2-year-old sale. You had the Keeneland April sale yesterday, and it's the same thing. A lot of the talent, the obvious horses stand out. So your obvious first round guys, everybody's on them. But other guys, for whatever reason, They might not have worked in 10 flat. They might be a 10 and 2, 10 and 3 runner, using the racing analogy. But, you know, they've got some stuff that sharp scouts can find that bargain. You know, like, okay, this, you know, this kid's not playing for a major D1 program, but, you know, what, he's facing good pitching. He's been hitting. He's got speed, good bat, and, you know, might be able to get a bargain. And there are 40 rounds in a draft, and, you know, after the top, like the racing analogy, after that heavy top of the market where everybody sees the obvious guys, there's a lot of hard work that these scouts do to try to find, diamonds in the rough, where guys that have fallen through the cracks, or guys that, you know, might not be known outside a certain region. And so it's a fascinating job, whether you're scouting racehorses at, for example, a boutique event at Faye Tipton, or you're going to like OBS April, May, later, you know, for a two-year-old, where you got a lot of talent, but you need to work to find it.
Well, some of them make themselves obvious, like the tap at my Conquistadori filly yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew she was going to be, the likely sale topper, but the 1.3 price tag, I think is, you know, I think it's appropriate. These high profile pinhooks, Sid, that, you know, we discussed around the time of the Gulfstream sale, yearlings selling for, you know, 500, 600, 700,000. This one was 775, yeah. And it, you know, it's a decent return, almost doubling the money, I guess. But it seems like such a dice roll to be paying that kind of money if you're not an end user, knowing that you've got to train that horse, you know, into a 2 year old season, into a 2 year old sale environment. I mean, that's a high risk, I guess, high reward.
It is, and in fact, I won't name names here, but I know of a similar case a year or two ago where a guy I know had a gorgeous tappet in a yearling sale. He decided not to sell for seven. He arnated for $700,000, decided not to sell, thought he'd wheel it back in a two-year-old sale himself. He was the owner and breeder, didn't get his money in the two-year-old sale, and the horse didn't amount to anything. So it is a real high-risk playing field. And, you know, the bottom line is that in this particular case, you mentioned $775 for this filly. She had a lot going, aside from the fact that, you know, great pedigree, sire, dam, everything. She's got this full sibling right now on the Derby trail. And so that was a big catalog improvement. She worked great, has the looks, and, you know, you knew that the horse had to bring over $1 million to sell. It is a good return. Ultimately, I think anybody playing at that deep end of the market has to be prepared to raise their own purchase.
Well, the pinhook, the pinhook risk factor, there's always interesting potential. I'm looking at the Red Wing, paid $60,000 for that Hip 136, the Bodemeister colt, that then turned around and fetched $200,000. And so that, yeah. I mean, that, you know, that's more in line with the, you know, with the standard.
Yeah.
We had, and we'll see at OBS next week, in, you know, 2 weeks, we'll see the some of the ones that we talked about actually in March when we were at OBS, and the much smaller types. Our friend Aaron Yagoda, who turned that that one the sprint colt from 60,000, 60 or 70,000 into 550,000. I mean, that's the pinhook magic that you're more familiar with. But in recent years, these big six figure buys, I don't know. You better eat your Wheaties to take these chances.
You got to have some brass.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a recent example of a case where it didn't work out was the Ashland winner. And Francis Caron has written a blog post that worked over consultants, if you want to read about it. But Randy Bradshaw purchased the hard-spun filly who won the Ashland. He's a pinhooker. Didn't get his price. She's got a great pedigree, but she'd worked in 10-3, right? So he gave it to his old buddy Dallas Stewart, both graduates of the Dwayne Lucas School. And Dallas has never seen a grade one race he doesn't like. Put her in, boxcar numbers, and now she's a G1 winner with that tremendous pedigree. Goes back to roughshod through Moccasin, and now he's headed to the Kentucky Oaks. And Bradshaw stayed in on that because he couldn't sell it. So there's a case where it worked out. It's one of the reasons also why you get so many outs in these 2-year-old sales, because right now guys have put all this money into a horse, and if they're not going to get the return they want, they've already got a horse ready to run. So it's easy to RNA or out a horse, and a few months later, you're at the races.
And I can think back to the conversations I had with, particularly with Glennie Kane Oakford, and we would monitor that decision making process, Sid, and it always seemed that there was a period, when things were not good economically, when you had the meltdown, where people were not in a position to do that. And I can really remember when the pendulum was starting to swing back, and Glennie and I remember bringing that up and saying, if people are willing to go home with the horse, that says that they're in better shape financially, and that they don't have to just take whatever price comes, under gavel.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a really important point you made, because you're probably talking to Glennie probably around the time of the meltdown too.
Yep.
And that's absolutely right. The market was heated. It was overpriced at that point, like the rest of the country in industry and commerce and the business. And people took severe losses, obviously, during that period. And now, a decade, more than 10 years later, it feeds into exactly this type of thinking, which is, I'll buy a $775,000 yearling and use your price to flip. That shows you how far we've come. And that's so symptomatic of the top of the market, as we've stressed all along. You have the top of the market, and you have a big free fall underneath it.
Well, I assume that Keeneland was happy enough with the reintroduction of the April, the 2-year-old
training.
Yeah,
I think there were.
Yeah, there was a pretty big gap between the filly, the $1.3 million filly, and the next set of
and
purchases.
And I think there was a $1,500 horse that sold in that sale too.
Meaning a from.
A $1,500, wasn't there a $1,500, in other words, the price ranges.
down to $1,500.
Yeah, there was a hip number 152 sold for $1,500.
Well, so there you go. The top end to the bottom end.
That's exactly right.
There was also, you know, I didn't look carefully at the going into the sale at the horses of racing age portion, but Sweet Diane, that 3-year-old Will Take Charge filly, Riverbend bought for $500,000.
Yeah, and that was the filly that was bred by Tanya Gunter. Her her breeding name is Euro. When she breeds by herself,
Euro West.
Euro
yeah.
West. Yeah, and you know they have. Obviously, patronized Will Take Charge pretty heavily because if you recall last September, they bought back the Will Take Charge half to Justify for a pretty big price. And, you know, here's the thing, again, another element of the marketplace is Will Take Charge is the first crop sire. That's a risky move in the sense that, you know, you don't know how Will Take Charge is going to pan out. And, you know, you take a risk sometimes. They took that risk. We'll see what happens. And, of course, you know, it's still early in the game for Will Take Charge. He's done quite nicely so far. But, again, as we've stressed in this program for years, unless you come up with something big quick, it's tough going. And, you know, we talked about New Year's Day at the bottom end of the market, went out of the country pretty quick, and now he's got a G1 winner in Maximum Security. But again, a first crop horse really needs to come up with something big quick. And we'll be looking for Will Take Charge to do that. He's had a nice stream of stakes horses, you know, there are a bunch of unbridled songs at stud, Arrogate being the main guy. And as we've stressed, unbridled song is looking for that heir. Last year he had Cross Traffic, first crop, come up with Jay Walk, the champion 2-year-old filly. And, you know, one of these horses, whether it's Cross Traffic or Gradar or Will Take Charge or Arrogate or Liam's Map. There's a bunch of them lined up to take over their sire's spot. Hopefully one of them will.
Well, and you know, that's a story that when it comes to the first crop runners, that's the one of the stories we follow at this time of year, and saw that Wicked Strong, who we talked about at the time of OBS, Wicked Strong, first starter, had a winner at Keeneland the other day.
Very good example, yeah.
Immediately.
And, of course, it's kind of hard fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Sid, let's dive in. Aside from the bloodstock side, let's talk about the winners from the weekend. And the interesting name and story to start with is certainly Roadster, who emerges basically right on time, right when he had to, after, you know, some issues as a 2-year-old, some throat issues, and that seems to be behind him. You know, those surgeries can be tricky. Sometimes they take, sometimes they don't. This one, they were confident that it would. I got to say, I was really delighted for Peter Fleur, who, you know, is putting money in and had success with Collected, but a different kind. That's a different kind of success when you want to have colts and you want to get to classic season, winning a race like the Santa Anita Derby. I mean, that's what their program, that's what Speedway's concept has been. And Fleur was just on cloud nine, predictably. Talk a little bit about your impressions of this colt.
This colt was, again, a very expensive, more, I think, 575 yearling. Of course, he's by Quality Road. Steve, who's, you know, among the elite stallions in the country right now. This colt, you touched on his breathing problems. Prior to that, in conversations I'd had with Bob last year, and of course, you know, publicly he talked about this horse at one point as being his next the replacement for Justify. He was very high on this horse. I, with an interesting game winner, really kind of pressed him on the comparisons between them. And this was last summer. And he told me at the time that there wasn't much between them. Okay. And, of course, then game winner beat him because I subsequently found out about the throat issue. Now they're both right. And you know what? His prediction was absolutely spot on. Because look at the difference in that race. It was just a neck separating the two of them at the wire. Somebody had asked me about the comparison between these two horses. You know, Game Winner is a big horse. He's a horse that is notably not a good workhorse. He's a type of horse that needs to be vigorously ridden hard for a long ways out. He doesn't have the gear changes. He grinds away. This horse showed a real a different dimension. Had shown a lot more speed. This time he comes from behind. Obviously has a much more kind of acceleration when called upon right away. And he's not as robust as Game Winner physically, but he handled a deep track really well, and Churchill tends to be deep. He looks extraordinarily promising, Steve, obviously coming into this race, and both of these two horses, I think, at the moment have to be 1-2 either way. Game Winner, of course, lost a ton of ground in that race coming to Kentucky to the Derby.
Let's dive in and poke around under the hood. Take a look at this pedigree.
The sire. Describe it briefly for me again, because I just lost my connection.
Okay. Well, you know, the quality roadside of yeah. this is certainly, you know, that part really feels like Roadster is settling, or Quality Road is settling in, as a perennial type now. I mean, is going to get horses regularly.
Yeah, I mean, Bellafina just also. I mean, you know, it's just the array of horses he's had is just mind-boggling, really.
Well, this one is come together with a female family that is just loaded with stamina influences. I mean, between Red Ransom in there and Smartin, Ten Tam, and Silver Ghost is the dam sire of Ghost Dancing, and really a horse that has that classic kind of speed influence in the sire side, and then tons of stamina in the dam side.
And also, this is a classic Ned Evans breeding, correct me if I'm not mistaken, top and bottom, because and there's a lot of it's a great combination of speed and stamina, as you mentioned, and you need that for the Derby. You know, a lot of times when people handicap the Derby, Steve, they go overboard looking for just stamina. And, you know, one of the things you have to keep in mind is that this is a race that needs stamina. Yes, obviously you stay the distance, but you need that speed part of it. And that's why in recent years you've seen, surprisingly sometimes, horses that seem like they might have more speed winning this race. You'll get horses that might be more stamina-oriented coming into your exotics, but it's the it seems like it's the speedier parts of it that kind of tell, as long as they can stay the trip. And to give you an example, say a horse like Nyquist, for example, had a fairly speedy pedigree. This particular colt, just taking a look at the components of the pedigree, he's out of a Silver Ghost mare, right? Ghost Dancing. Well, Silver Ghost was a Ned Evans horse, just like Quality Road was, and he was a Mr. Prospector horse out of Misty Galore. A horse that really did give a lot of speed to pedigrees. If you go back to the next dam by Red Ransom, Paul Mellon's horse, yes, it's true, he's a son of Roberto, who was an Epsom Derby winner and a classic influence, but Red Ransom himself was undefeated in 3 starts and was a fast Roberto. Then you get to the third dam, Smartin, and Smartin, Dance Teacher, this is a great Ned Evans family, speed and stamina. The next dam, Tentam, known as a speed and stamina influence as well. So this horse is a great combination pedigree that you look for. It's like everything down this line was developed by Ned Evans, as was Quality Road. So it's a great legacy for him. Really, when you look at this horse, what it's all about.
Well, and amazingly, you go back looking at the female family, and I'm just kind of thumbing through here. The all four dams. You got to go all the way back to Lunar Dancer was the acquisition. That was that's the first horse that in the pedigree on the female side that Evans did not breed himself. He got Intentional Move, who got right. Dance Teacher, who got Ransom Dance, who got Ghost Dancing. So 4 generations of Ned Evans, Spring Hill, Virginia quality here create this horse.
I said 575 was 525 as yearling, but Arthur Hancock, Stone Farm bred this colt. They bought the dam, Ghost Dancing, for $220,000 from the Ned Evans dispersal. That turned out to be a great buy.
No, there's a lot of that that went into this because, of course, Evans got Quality Road out of Cobla with Elusive Quality, and Cobla, the Strawberry Road mare, Alan Paulson.
Yeah, that's right. And the Quality Road story really shouldn't be underestimated because, excuse me, he went to stud. Post economic meltdown. In his year, though, he was one of 3 most expensive first year horses at stud, along with looking at Lucky and Blaine, each for $35,000 each. Out of those 3, and all have done extremely well, but it takes a lot to get to that elite level, and Quality Road is at 150 now. Looking at Lucky is 20, I think, and Blaine is 30 this year. All accomplished, obviously, but you see the spike in Quality Road.
One thing worth noting, and I can't recall if, when Quality Road has come up, Sid, when we've talked about him, the presence of Aladar in getting to Quality Road, because of course Kobla out of Winglet, a daughter of Aladar, and we don't see Aladar's name in pedigrees as much as we'd like, you know.
Yeah, that is very, very true. He wasn't a sire of sires, and it's almost like when you see it, it's surprising.
Definitely, Ed, but it's going to, with Quality Road's prowess and the way his stud career has gone, certainly Aladar's presence lives on in the stud book there. This has got a lot of markers. Red Ransom mare. You love that for durability and for some rawness and there's a lot of good things happening. This horse it makes sense that he immediately on Sunday in the future wagers that he immediately shouldered, just being the Baffert runner and basically coming to fruition the way he did to win this race. And I know Gary West was, I saw Gary West heading for the exits actually after the race, as I was going down to the track apron, Gary and Mary were heading out, but I'm sure he was disappointed, but Gary's had many, many, many big wins, and recently, for Peter Fleur, this was arguably, let's say, not more important, but it's a great win for him and his partners, and so I was pleased for them.
It's a terrific win, and it comes down to. Like Aidan O'Brien, who tests his horses, he runs them against the best. He'll run his best horses against each other. Kudos to these guys. Baffert ran his for two separate owners, the two best 3-year-olds in his barn together in the same race, and he let them figure it out on the track, and it was super close, as we all saw. And the idea for Baffert anyway is to get to Kentucky to the Derby and peak on that day. So Gary West still has something to look forward to, and so does Peter Fleur and Speedway.
Very much. A couple of other thoughts. You mentioned Bellafina, and she dominated. She basically overmatched that group. There was another pairing on Saturday that, in terms of wins, Giftbox, the Thriller over McKinsey. And earlier on the card, I've been really stressing that one bad boy, the Ms. Bad Behavior brother, who broke his maiden on the grass. And Baltus took advantage of the grass opportunity to go the mile, and also a twirling candy. So it was kind of a showcase day at Santa Anita for twirling candy, who just kind of grinds away and gets runners, right?
He's a very good stallion. Yeah, and let's remember that this is a line that has appeared on the landscape, and it's doing extremely well. It's appeared out of pretty much nowhere, and that's the line that comes from Fappiano to Crypto Clearance to a horse called Ride the Rails, who was sent to Argentina where he got Candy Ride. Candy Ride then came back here to Sakura's Hillendale, started off at 10,000, had bad feet. Candy Ride had failed a vet several times himself in Argentina, where he was only sold for like 13,000 as a yearling, and then was undefeated in three starts there, sold for $900,000 to the Craigs, brought here, made three more starts, including that Pacific Classic over Medaglia d'Oro. But bad feet and some issues curtailed his career. Undefeated in six starts. Sakura took a chance on him with that weird pedigree, and he delivered. He's now since been moved to Lane's End, where he continues. And, of course, you know, this weekend, aside from his son twirling Candy, he has Game Winner, who was second in that race. That's Candy Ride himself. And Vekoma, the Bluegrass winner. So this line is extremely vibrant right now. Twirling Candy, as you pointed out, stands with Candy Ride at Lane's End for $25,000. He's an excellent stallion for the money. And Lane's End also stands Unified, another son of Candy Ride. We're going to get Game Winner, obviously, going to stud. You're going to have several more Candy Rides coming up through the pipeline. And, you know, this is a vibrant line. And like I said, sometimes these lines take detours and come back. And that's the best way to describe Candy Ride, because he's a Fappiano line horse, as is Unbridled and Empire Maker, as they are. But they are through the traditional lines, famous parts of it. This is through Ride the Rails. And coincidentally, it's Candy Ride does well with Unbridled. So there's inbreeding Fappiano. And does well with Empire Maker. So what I've noticed is that Unbridled Song turned into, obviously, a terrific broodmare sire. And he blends well with that Fappiano line. He's a Fappiano line horse. If you look at Tappet, for example, you'll notice he's had a lot of success with the Unbridled Song. If you look at Candy Ride, he's had a lot of success with Fappiano. If you look at Warfront, who's out of a Rubiano mare, who's a Fappiano line horse, he's done well with Unbridled, with the Fappiano line. So that's something that we're going to start to see more of, just like we see really good results, for example, with Deputy Minister inbreeding. Curlin's had success because he's out of a Deputy Minister mare, but he's had success with mares that have Deputy Minister in their pedigrees. That's a really strong inbreeding component, and it looks like because so many of these stallions have that Fappiano line in them somewhere down the line. Tappet has it. Warfront has it. Candy Ride has it. And when you put more of that into them, they seem to work. And one of the things we've always found early on is that one of the best conduits for inbreeding to Mr. Prospector has been Fappiano. And so, this is a bit inside baseball, inside breeding, but that component is something to look at when you're analyzing pedigree.
Quick note too: there are a couple of subplots from the weekend. Sid, before we wrap, I've gotta mention Cantheros and Hill and Dale, of course, the very nice score for Cantheros with World of Trouble getting the grade one on dirt in the Carter. And also, I want to note Smiling Tiger, the Peter Miller's Spice Perfection, and the very smart gambit going to Keeneland and winning the Madison. And pretty much that race blown apart. Runner-up, she and the runner-up, well clear from the rest of that field, Amy's Challenge. I was really kind of rooting for Javier Contreras with late night powwow, but she gets grade one placing, which is nice. The streaking, the little mid-Atlantic streaker, but Spice Perfection and Amy's Challenge, they put on a very nice show, and they were 6-7 lengths clear of late night when they hit the wire.
Yeah, and both those horses are speedier types, obviously. Both have done well. Cantharis, of course, following up his success in Dubai the week earlier. So the word has been out on Cantharis and what a bargain he's been. He's part of that group of horses that John Sakura has for Barbara Bankey Stone Street. First and foremost, Curlin, of course. But there's McLean's Music. There's Cantharos, who started off in Florida and then was moved up. You know, he was a horse that was standing for 5,000 in Florida and made his way. They're doing the same thing, Stone Street, that is, with Jess's Dream down in Florida now. Both horses, notable, Smiling Tiger and Cantharos, as being Stormcat line horses, descending to Stormcat, again, as we mentioned that example of Candy Ride descending to Fappiano through a detour of Ride the Rails. Well, in Smiling Tiger's case, he's a grandson of Stormcat through a horse that really isn't that well-known, and that's Hold That Tiger. In the case of Cantharos, he goes back to Stormcat through Taylor the Cat, obviously, who's still at Ashford, a very good sire, but through Taylor the Cat's exported son, Lionheart, who's in Turkey. So you see how these things work, Steve. I mean, it's never a linear progression, or it's not always a linear progression. And by that, I mean, for example, if you take a horse like Frankel. Frankel is by Galileo. Galileo is by Sadler's Wells. Sadler's Wells is by Northern Dancer. There's a linear progression of great, 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 great. But these are examples of the detours that take place, and that's what makes it such an interesting game. You never know, where a Candy Ride could come from.
Well, that's what makes this the science that it is. It's one part I guess fact and several parts alchemy.
And I appreciate the geneticists getting involved, the science behind all this, but I wish them all the best of luck, because if they can figure out what the magic bullet is, great. But nobody has so far.
Sid, we're inching closer. Any thoughts about this field that they're going to draw in about an hour and a half here at Oaklawn?
Well, I'm a big fan of Warfront, and I like this colt, Omaha Beach. I like War of Will. I like War of Will. notice that have they run that race where Aiden O'Brien's running two Warfronts in the Kentucky Derby kind of prep race in
tomorrow
at Chelmsford? Yeah, that's tomorrow.
Tomorrow, the Cardinal.
Yeah,
it's called.
The Cardinal. Okay, so. You know, Warfront has really come or reappeared on the dirt. And both these colts, I think, are very legitimate horses. So he's the horse I'm really looking at. In my opinion, I you know, even though Improbable is out of an AP Indy mare, which gives him a lot of stamina, I'm still kind of wary of him getting 10 furlongs. City Zip horse, and City Zip does get an array of horses, that have gone from sprinters to 10 furlong horses, turf and dirt, two turn, one turn, obviously. I'll take a look and see how he runs this time, but I don't have any concerns with these two war fronts on the dirt. I'll tell you that. Yeah.
Well, curious to see how much this gate fills up, because Galilean, Gray Attempt, Improbable, Long Range Toddy, Omaha Beach, Six Shooter, Country House, and then there's another four or five that may or may not go. So we'll know more. It's 10 o'clock here, Central Time, so we're about 2 hours away from the draw that always features a lot of hoopla and excitement. You'll have typically Miss Arkansas on hand and so forth. It's they take it seriously around here, Sid.
Yeah, you've been traveling all over the place. When are you headed back?
Sunday. I can't stay for the Apple Blossom. That's the one curveball they threw this year, putting the Apple Blossom on Sunday, which, frankly, I understand and makes really a lot of sense to anchor a card on the back end after Derby Day instead of running the a Grade One that prominent. Running it on Friday, and they're going to have TV focus, and I'm sure that they'll, have some handle support because of it. So it makes a lot of sense on all fronts. But I'm going to miss it because I've got to get a flight back on Sunday morning from Memphis. After Derby, I drive to Memphis, and I go to the rib joint that that Elvis used to eat at right down the road from Graceland. it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now you've got to put a book together on this eating guy, because I'll tell you what, fantastic following. I know you don't put it on Twitter, but you do on Facebook.
Yeah,
and it's great. Yeah.
I'm
headed to Tampa right now.
Oh, well,
we've got a game there tonight, so I'm gonna crank out of here now.
All right, enjoy, and I'll send you a couple of potential recommendations. Where are you playing? Where are they playing?
They're playing USF, University of South Florida, and I think it's in North Tampa.
All right. Well, because I'll tell you what, I found that barbecue joint. This is north of Tarpon Springs. That was just unbelievable. That roadside stand.
That stuff looks incredible, yeah.
Sid, and actually, I mean, that road... It kind of brings you out toward Ocala if you're gonna not take the main highways. I'll send you the specifics. That was unbelievable.
Excellent.
All right, Sid. We'll talk next week, and the Derby field will be assembled, other than some of the short strokes.
Yeah.
Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale with the Sid Fernando. Follow Sid and, of course, Work Thoroughbred Consultants. You know, we're getting, we're into April. We still got another, 6 weeks, give or take, of breeding season. So if there's any late season decisions you need to make, touch base with Sid. Top of the hour right upon us. And when we come back, we've got visits yet with Jeremy Plunk. Countdown to the Crown has been counting down, and same with Jeremy. Some of the short strokes here with the Arkansas Derby and the Lexington, because the Lexington, I don't want to give the Lexington the short shrift. It's going to be important, those 28, 4, and 2 points with the presence of another Twist of Fate and others. Looks like Harvey Wallbanger is going to run back in there. Sueno. So this one, this Lexington is going to impact the Derby field, potentially, right? So Seth is going to join us as well, and I think we're going to get a trainer visit in that I didn't get a chance yesterday. And Stu, just a little too much to recap everything. So stay with us. Hour 3 from Oaklawn, and it is absolutely glorious here. Looking forward to talking to some of the locals tomorrow and Friday, particularly about this meet extending, you know, past, you know, the Arkansas Derby and Racing Festival. It's going to be, you know, it's new ground going all the way to Derby weekend. So it's going to be interesting. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.